And welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hey there, friends, and welcome to my favorite day of the week and my favorite time of the day. It is Friday. Yay, it is Friday, and I don't care what you do on the weekends. I'm a nurse. I've spent plenty of weekends in my career working, but there's just something different about the energy of a Friday, and it is Ask Dr. Nurse Mama Friday, where I'm answering all of your questions. Well, not all of your questions, but as many as I can get to. And you know, we are almost a year into this show, the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, where I'm using my professor brain, my hands-on nursing experience, and my heart as a mom to do my best to be a guide on the side for families who are walking through things that are tough and a culture that seems chaotic and scary at times. And it seems like no matter how many questions I get, so many of them are overwhelmingly related to technology. And this is just a reality that we're facing as families. I mean, I grew up with the phone that had the cord on it. Not too long ago, I saw a social media reel where a very well-meaning Gen Alpha person who was about 12 years old was talking about, wouldn't it be great if they had this thing called a phone that actually attached to the wall so you didn't lose it? Like, because I'm always losing my cell phone and I'm thinking, oh my goodness, everything old is new again. That's how I grew up, right? There was no call waiting, or you would take the cord and try to stretch it down in the hallway to shut the door in the bathroom or the hall closet to get some privacy. This is the world we grew up in, and it is radically different than what we are experiencing now. And our children are growing up as digital natives. They are growing up with the expectation that this is their world, where to us, we're still learning. We're still surprised by things. They are not. They have completely different expectations. And so today I'm going to be focusing a lot of time answering some questions about TikTok specifically. Now, we've talked a lot about social media, we've talked a lot about smartphones, but today is going to be TikTok. Now, before I get into that, let me remind you that ever since January, every week, we've been introducing a new habit to evaluate your family and see, are we engaging in this habit? Because these habits that I'm talking about are really simple, but somehow not easy to do, but they are evidence-based, research-focused. They are proven ways to improve the health of your family. And these habits are ones that you can stack on top of each other. It's not something new to do. It's something to add into what you are already doing. And if you've missed out on those and you're thinking, what are those? Or you know what? I've only half paid attention. You can go back and listen to the Dr. Nurse Mama Coaching Minutes. You can find them at AFR. You can find them on any podcast platform, and they're just 1 minute per habit where I review what those are and you can assess your family and see what you're doing. And this week we are talking about being careful. This last month, we've been talking about ways to be, how to be an influencer, how to be resilient. And today we're talking about being careful. And I'm especially going to apply that to technology. Let me give you the verse that I'm meditating on out of Ephesians 5 and memorizing. Look carefully then how you walk, not as unwise, but as wise, making the best use of the time, because the days are evil. Now, we have to be careful how we walk. We cannot be unwise. And a lot of times what happens, especially in relation to technology, is we just want to ignore it. We just want the world to go away. We just want to not have to put in the time and energy to figure out things that we don't understand, and a lot of times that we don't even like. And we just have this uneasy truce like, okay, let's just let things go and see how they go, and hopefully everything will turn out okay. Well, that is not a wise approach. And I have taken that approach at times myself, but I've been really convicted meeting family after family who are just blindsided by the potential harms that can happen on social media and on electronic platforms. And then they're filled with regret and think, I should have done this, I should have done that. And listen, we do the very best we can with what we know. And then when we learn more, we do better. And we have to give ourselves grace and space for the journey, to be human, to learn, to know what is wisdom. And that's why we have to always turn to the wisdom of God's word. So let's talk a little bit more about being careful. Now, I looked this up in the dictionary, and the definition of being careful is being cautious in one's actions, to be solicitously, that's such a hard word to say, mindful, but be intentionally mindful, to see, to discern, to perceive. And when I had started looking into the biblical context of being careful, especially as I've just read to you in Ephesians 5, we see instruction to be full of care. That's to be watchful, to be provident, to be attentive, to support and protect. And that's what we need to do to our families. We need to be attentive to the technologies that are invading our homes, to support our families, and also to protect our families from the harms that can occur there. We have to be watchful, be intentional and wise. And then when we look at that verse about making the best use of time, listen, there is no greater thief of time than technology. It is robbing us of interactions with our family. It's robbing us of time better spent on more meaningful pursuits, because all of us, if you have a smartphone, if you have social media, the pull to doom scroll, the pull to really waste time, you can look and watch a show that in the end means absolutely nothing. And you see that you've just wasted an hour or two of your day, all the while we bemoan saying, oh, I wish I had more time to pray or to read my Bible or to do a devotional or to spend time with my family. But if you look at your screen time, that is the thief of time. That is technology. So when we think specifically on screen time about social media, we know that a little over half of teenagers spend 3 hours per day on social media. There is not as much research saying, looking at how many hours per day adults spend on there, but I'm going to bet it's pretty equivalent. We also know that teens spend about 9 to 12 hours per day on media in general. Now, here's something to really make you think. 40% of adults in the United States get their news only from social media. And about a third of teens and young adults do. Now, that may be an article that is linked through a news service on your social media, but we really see a big shift in how people are getting their information. No more do you go out for the milk bottle and the newspaper at the door. We are just having a 24/7 stream of information on social media. And especially with social media, there's been a lot in the news lately about TikTok and a TikTok ban. And you have questions about it, and I'm going to try to give you some answers about it. Now, it used to be when I first started really addressing social media in my clinical practice that the one question that parents would hear is, when can I get a Snapchat account? But Snapchat has fallen second to TikTok. Now, TikTok has 3 billion, that's billion with a B, downloads in the world. 2/3 of American teenagers use TikTok regularly. Now, there's a lot of questions about who owns TikTok, where does it come from? And from my best understanding, it is owned by a Beijing-based company called ByteDance. This is a company founded by Chinese entrepreneurs. There is a lot of argument swirling around that. Some people, supporters will say, well, it's privately owned, 60% of the investors are global. However, on the other hand, these countries have banned the use of TikTok on government-issued devices, citing national security concerns. We're talking Australia, Belgium, Canada, Denmark, the European Union, France, Latvia, and the Netherlands, New Zealand, Norway, the UK, and the US. And other countries like India, Afghanistan, Nepal, Pakistan, Somalia, Taiwan, that's a lot of countries, they have issued in some way, shape, or form more sweeping bans that also cover not only government issues devices, but also private use of the app. Now, why? What is going on here? Well, just recently here in the United States, a law was signed that will effectively ban TikTok about 1 year from now unless it's sold by its parent company because of those security concerns. Now, there are certainly going to be some legal challenges and delays, but it was really a significant bipartisan statement on the perceived threat to national security. This law passed the House, 360 votes to 58, and it passed in the Senate 79 to 18. And in these days, there are very few things that are so overwhelmingly bipartisan. And I'll tell you, that caught my attention to say, this is clearly a broad area of concern. It is widespread. And it's no secret that social media platforms are really perfectly curated to foster both censorship of some ideas, but also the other side of that is the spread of propaganda. And the best psychologists in the world are tasked with making these platforms addictive. Now, you know, this actually isn't a new concept. We've seen this in the food industry, and I've talked before with some guests about a concept called hyperpalatability. That's hyperpalatability. That's basically foods that have irresistible combinations of fat and sugar and salt and carbohydrates. So when you have that first bite, it makes a flavor explosion that makes it really addictive. Like, you want to have more. And those foods are so much easier to overeat. Now, it's really easy to find yourself halfway through a bag of potato chips, and we just don't feel that way about a bag of spinach. You're not going to sit on the couch and take one bite of plain spinach and say, wow, that is absolutely delicious. I'm just going to eat half the bag right here. But we do that with other foods. One serving of ice cream is going to be bigger than our serving of peas. And there is science around this, searching for the most irresistible combinations. And it's really interesting. If you kind of dive down in that science, they're looking at percentage compositions of fat. Like, for example, looking for a fat composition more than 25% of calories coming from fat, or more than 30% from salt. And that's partly because of our brains, the part of our brains that regulate eating and energy, that's the hypothalamus, they become adjusted to over-consuming those hyper-palatable foods. Now, what in the world am I saying? What is the point here? Well, the point is the same thing is happening in our consumption of social media. That point where we feel mentally satisfied by eating changes and influences our eating behaviors. And I see the same thing happening in our consumption behaviors on social media. We become used to being hyperstimulated, and we need more and more of it. And we're on that platform longer and longer, which drives their algorithm, drives their profit margins. And that feedback loop is what it makes it so hard to get off media or to not overeat. If we don't adjust the underlying issue of why we're doing that, our bodies fight us. And like I said, social media is essentially following that same principle of hyperpalatability. And that's what we're seeing with TikTok. It is just an explosion of the senses. When we're looking at it, it's almost irresistible. And people often talk about going down the rabbit hole of social media, but I recently heard it described really as a black hole, which is a vacuum in space. And NASA's definition of a black hole is an astronomical object with a gravitational pull so strong that nothing, not even light, can escape it. And that sounds about right for where we are in social media. So when we come back, I'm going to talk some more about the specifics of TikTok and what you give social media in exchange for what you think is free access to their platform. Nothing is ever free. And as parents, what are we really not paying attention to that we're exchanging in perception when what we perceive as something free? It's something every parent should know, every adult should know. Talk more about it when we come back from this break. A recent study reports that the rapidly declining global birth rate will lead to a major population crisis if birth rates continue to decline. Their massive support for Planned Parenthood is all part of their plan. While we may feel hopeless in the constant attack on life, there's an amazing way to fight back. When they shout abortion, we shout life. Preborn is leading the way. Every day, their network rescues 200 babies. You see, when a mother meets her baby on ultrasound and hears the heartbeat, a baby's chance at life doubles. The ultrasound is the secret weapon that joins a mother's heart to her child. Preborn provides ultrasounds for clinics in the highest abortion areas. Can we join hands nationwide for life? One ultrasound is just $28, but any gift will help. $5,000 underwrites ultrasounds for the entire network for a day. All gifts are tax deductible. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250, baby, or visit preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
When I take a step back, I can see it. All the pain, all the fear we've been feeling. Losing sight of the thing that we're needing, that we're needing. Honestly, I think we just need Jesus. Honestly, I think we just need Jesus. Have we all gone mad? Have we lost our minds? What used to be wrong, we say that is right. Jesus.
Welcome back, friends, to Ask Dr. Nurse Mama Friday. That song is Honestly, We Just Need Jesus by Tarian. And I'll tell you, sometimes when I start going down the rabbit hole, the wormhole, the black hole, whatever you want to call it, and looking at all of the threats that face our families today, it can be overwhelming. And I can find a lot of peace and a lot of comfort in saying, okay, I'm just going to let go of all of that and realize we really just need Jesus. And today, we're talking about being careful. That is our habit for the week. And being careful how we engage with social media and how we engage with media. Now, you'll notice I did not say be fearful. I said be careful. And sometimes we're just not careful. Sometimes we just don't think well enough about the risks that are involved. We don't think very intentionally about what we're doing, because that is really the goal of media companies, is to make media consumption mindless, that we just constantly have a stream of something, and that there is no moment in our life for quietness, for stillness, for peace. There is no moment where we are not consuming some sort of media. And that's what we're seeing, especially with social media. Their job is to get you to stay on the platform a little bit longer. Just one more video, just one more reel, one more interaction, whatever that may be. And so today I'm talking specifically about TikTok and the ban that is theoretically coming in a year. It's already banned from federally issued government devices, and many college campuses banned the use of Wi-Fi to use the app, again, citing national security concerns for sure. So let's think about how TikTok was launched. It was actually originally launched as an app called Musical.ly. Do any of you remember that one? But relaunched as TikTok. Now, there are about 170 million American users. That is an incredible amount of information being collected on a daily, hourly, minute-by-minute basis. That really is a treasure trove of data. And that's what social media companies' currency is data. So TikTok or other social media, they know what you as a user likes, and knows what you watch, it knows what you listen to, it knows who you know, and knows where you go. It is a camera-based app that is used every day right in your home. Now, if a foreign government was going to spy on another country, it's a pretty powerful and easy way to get cameras on the inside of homes and a real up-close personal view of everyday American life. Now, not only that, but consider this. I just talked to you in the first segment about hyper palatable foods, And social media's version of that is hyper-personalized content. So again, it sees you, it knows you, it learns your preferences, your proclivities, and it is intoxicating for adults and kids alike. And kids today, let me tell you, they more than anything want to be seen. They want to be heard. They want to be known and loved. And the scary truth is that we have AI, artificial intelligence, levering technology to foster those counterfeit feelings through electronics. And that is what we as family members have to compete with. We have an AI bot that is dedicated to learning our children. They learn what they like, how to talk to them. We train them through AI to build connections. And we see this through apps like Snapchat that have AI bots that you can dress like you want, you can name like you want, and they really start to seem real. This is really terrifying stuff, honestly. And because what we see is that some people actually feel like they have a relationship with artificial intelligence, and that company is using it to leverage our purchasing power as consumers, to leverage our beliefs, to leverage our value system, to leverage our vote. And that is really just the beginning. Giving away that much data so freely, it really puts us as users in a very vulnerable state against a potentially weaponized arsenal of data. That, by the way, again, we perceive for getting for free, but we all know better than that. One of the parenting lines that is passed down in the parenting playbook generation to generation that actually is trustworthy, there are a lot that really aren't that great. Like gum does not stay in your stomach for 7 years. I really hate to ruin it for all the parents that use that as as motivation there. That's not true. But we do know that nothing in this life comes for free. Nothing in this world is free. And you may not exchange money to use these platforms, but the cost is information, very, very personal information about you, about your family, about your children, about your home. And one of the unique things specifically about TikTok is its algorithm-based content that's called, quote unquote, for you. It's cultivated, curated, just for you. Now, Facebook is more friend-based, Instagram is follower-based, TikTok is preference-based, and people become so emotionally attached to that personalized connection, they're willing to fight for it. So when the TikTok ban was first announced, TikTok actually put out messaging to its users saying, hey, this ban is impending and TikTok is going to go away and you won't have it anymore. And you should contact your legislator to oppose it, to protest it. Well, listen, I just read several accounts from lawmakers who said teens and adults, young adults, became so emotional about it that they were calling and actually threatening that they would rather die than live in a world without it. They were saying they would literally take their own lives over this. And that is terrifying. It's scary to think about the capability to really generate mass hysteria with just that single prompt. And the power to influence is also something that we should be careful about. It's something that is very thought-provoking. Another report that I saw this morning, again, based on the best information available to me, said that last year, Osama bin Laden, yes, you're thinking a blast from the past from 9/11, his letter to America, which was originally released shortly after 9/11, it actually went viral recently on TikTok. And at first, there were only about a couple million views, which is a microcosm of TikTok's followers. But after a single influencer elevated it, within a few hours, it had reached tens of millions. And that's the power that one influencer can have on social media. And then they get vicarious credibility through the number of views. So if people see that something is widely shared, then somehow that's automatically credible, which is really a lot of times far from the truth. So now that we are all terrified, what in the world do we do? Well, again, we're going to reject fear-based families, a fear-based approach in families, and we're going to adopt an approach that is faith-informed. We're going to be careful. Going back to that scripture, we're going to look carefully then how you walk, not as unwise, but as wise, making the best use of the time because the days are evil. And there are a lot of things in media that are evil, that do intend to harm, that are harmful for our consumption, for our kids' consumption. And we really need to be careful and to be thoughtful on what we're looking at. But we cannot adopt a fear-based approach. So we know that fear-based parenting is really effective in generating fear, but it is not effective at all in generating behavioral change. So we can go and tell our kids about the information threats and the privacy threats and the security threats, but kids are developmentally wired to be invincible. They think, yes, I understand those things happen. I know that. I'm not dumb, but it's not going to happen to me. And that is a way they're developmentally wired because we want them, in some circumstances, to be willing to take risks. We want them to go outside the house and not be afraid. We want them to not be afraid to make new friends, to learn new things, to go to school, to get a job and go out on their own. But we have to provide some guardrails around those tendencies to have risk-taking behaviors to make sure that they're safe. And one of the biggest reasons our kids don't adopt those guardrails is because we haven't adopted them ourselves. Now, I am not hating on social media. There are some good things about it. There are some benefits. There are ways to stay connected. I know even through digital technology, grandparents who are able to talk face to face with their grandkids who may not live near them. There are some benefits there, but there are some risks for sure. And we cannot afford to be tuned out, to be apathetic, and just to kind of have a hands-off, careless approach. So some of the habits that we've talked about so far in helping you to navigate this are as follows. We talked about having tech-free zones and tech-free times. If we are constantly tethered to media, that is just not healthy. It's not healthy literally for your eyes, for your eyesight, for your brain and being overstimulated, for your body and sitting still and looking at a screen all day. We need to be intentional about untethering our family and having tech-free times and tech-free zones. Where in your house can you go to have family interactions that are not overshadowed by technology? We need to have those times where we are unplugged, where we are face-to-face, eye to eye, heart to heart, that we are engaging in things that move our bodies and that are beneficial to us. So where are the times and the places? I have shared before in our family, tech-free zone is definitely the table. My kids will be first to call out if anybody has their phone for any reason. And what I find is a lot of times my husband and I will pull out our phone and then make some sort of justification. Like, well, I'm just looking at, I need to check this work email, or I'm just looking at the time for what we're going to do later on tonight. But my kids will not have it. And we have given them permission to call us out on that. And it's nope. Then you leave the table and you have to be excused and go and look at that before or after. And so many times I feel so convicted because I think it can wait. It can absolutely wait. Another tech-free zone we have in our family is kids' bedrooms. Nobody needs a phone in their bedroom. It is, especially for kids, their safest space a lot of times, where they feel most uninhibited. And we don't want to put a camera in their hands or communication in their hands where they feel unguarded, where they feel safe, where they feel more at risk for risk-taking behaviors. We don't want to do that. So it's really important to have those, what are those look like for your family? Because every family is a little bit different. Or having specific tech-free times, like Tuesday, this Tuesday, we're all going to be off of our tech. Those are habits that you can have that help break that digital media tether. You may have heard me talk on a previous show about a phenomenon called digital soothing, where we're soothing our feelings of anxiety, our feelings of depression, our feelings of boredom, of anger by just scrolling mindlessly through social media. We don't want to do that. Other ways to make sure that you're having healthy tech habits are to have tech transparency. So if you have a computer in your house, put it somewhere where everybody can see it walking by so that you're not tempted to scroll through something that you shouldn't be scrolling through, that you're not looking at something that you feel like, oh, no one else is going to know, because you are still creating your digital footprint. Anytime we have something where we're prone to secrecy, then there is opportunity for sin. There is opportunity to stumble, to fall, to fail, to get lured into something. So have that tech transparency. Anything that you're watching should be out in the public, in the public eye. If you're married, you and your spouse should have full access to each other's devices and model this in front of your kids, that you can look through this at any time. And not too long ago, my husband actually gave us his password to social media and said, I want you to log me onto this so that you know when I'm on it, when I'm off of it, and you have full access to anything that I'm looking at. Just some of those just little boundaries like that can be really, really helpful. Other habits I've talked about are tech tracking, really tracking how much time you're spending. So many times we think, oh, it wasn't that long. But if you have an iPhone, you can go and look and see how much time each week you're spending on social media, on YouTube, on any other apps. And like I said at the top of the program, this technology is the thief of time from our families. And so look and see, when are you looking at that? Are you bringing work home and looking at work emails? Oh, I tend to do that. It's really hard not to do. So being really honest about tracking your time is important that you're spending on tech. And then tidying up your tech, not just downloading any app mindlessly. Why do you think games like Candy Crush are so prolific and they are so addictive? Well, we stay on there a long time. They can get advertisements in there and we don't realize. We just think, oh, it's just a harmless little game. But then you realize, okay, I've spent 4 hours of my life this week. Have I even spent 4 hours of my life this week talking to my family? Have we even spent 4 hours this week sharing a meal together or having a conversation? There are so many better ways we can be intentional about using our time. When we come back, I'll talk to you a little bit about COSA, the Kids Online Safety Act, and how you can work to keep yourself and your family safe online. We'll be right back on the other side of this break.
My father, your great-grandfather, fought in World War II.
Really?
He was a gunner on the big ship out in the Pacific Ocean.
Wow.
Your great-grandmother did her part, too.
Was she on a ship?
Oh, no. She stayed back home. She and a lot of her friends worked really hard in a factory because the men had gone off to war.
Ooh.
And they held scrap metal drives to help in the war effort. The folks back home were heroes, too.
Here at the American Family Association, we consider you the heroes back home. As you fulfill your responsibility of caring for your family day to day, your partnership with us is crucial as we fight the enemies of freedom in America. Thank you for your commitment to the American Family Association.
Grandpa, what's a scrap metal drive?
Let's get some cookies, and I'll tell you all about it.
Wow.
Welcome back, friends. That song is Made for More by Josh Baldwin. And what a great message to give to our kids and to our family that we were made for more. We were made for more than social media consumption. We were made for more than just mindlessly consuming digital media. And listen, we have got to be intentional. We have got to be careful in the media that we are allowing into our homes, whether that is movie streaming, whether that's YouTube, whether that is video streaming, whether that is some sort of form of social media. We really need to be careful and mindful about what we are consuming. And the verse we're talking about today is from Ephesians 5. Look carefully then how you walk, not as unwise, but as wise, making the best use of the time because the days are evil. And we can look in the world and find plenty of examples for evil. And the habit we're talking about this week is just being careful not to let that have too much influence. I've been talking about the laws surrounding TikTok and the impending ban, although it's complicated legislatively, but it is coming. That conversation is occurring, and there will continue to be more conversation in that space. And the other law that is really getting a lot of attention on Capitol Hill is COSA. That is the Kids Online Safety Act. I've talked about this before, but it's continued to make some progress and just went through House committee this week and got pretty broad support in the Senate earlier in the year in about mid-March of 2024. But what we see the debate here is a debate between adult privacy or freedoms and kid safety. And how do we balance those in a world where media makes that really, really difficult? Now, if you've read my book called Behind Closed Doors, A Guide to Help Parents and Teens Navigate Through Life's Toughest Issues, you'll know that I cover 12 of the most common issues I see in pediatrics today. And the first one that I cover after mental health is social media. And I share a story that is really representative of so many families I encounter, where we get online and you see that social media requires all platforms, almost all platforms, there's a few very rare exceptions, but almost all social media platforms require you to be 13 to use it. And that box comes up. And you know, when I think about how many things we agree to online, you just scroll down to the bottom. Yes, yes, yes. Legal language. Okay. Yeah, whatever. Check the box. Okay. It's fine. And we really are not careful in thinking about what are we really exchanging here? Because we are exchanging our privacy for a service, a media service that's happening. And we think, oh, it doesn't cost anything. It's free. But it is costing us something. It's costing information. And that is why that little box says 13, because that is the minimum age set by COPPA. That's the Children's Online Privacy Act, which is basically saying, hey, we, yes, companies, you have to be really careful. You can't just go collect whatever information you want for kids. There has to be some level of parental involvement there. And that's a big legal complexity that I won't go fully into here, but just know that I am aware of the complexities of the issue, and there are good points on both sides. But what I'm here to talk about today is how does this apply to families? Well, let me tell you about the provisions of COSA, the Kids Online Safety Act, and kind of talk to you about what is going on, because as parents, as family members, we need to be careful to follow these things to know that they are really impacting our everyday lives. So back to my book, you know that if you've read it, every chapter begins with a real life story. And the story that I see is a lot of parents who let their kids get on social media who don't meet that age requirement. And they will say their kid is very responsible, which could be very true, and that they're very vigilant, which again, could be very true. But the law does not make exception for responsible kids and vigilant parents. So what happens is if you violate that term of use and you say, yeah, my kid is 13, but they're not, then you could potentially void any legal protections available to you. If something bad happens to your child on that online platform, the platform's going to say, well, you shouldn't have been here anyway, so we really don't have an obligation to help you. And that is a terrible place to be. I've seen families who have been in that place. And again, we're very well intentioned, but it's so overwhelming. Nobody wants to read all of that language that's there. So some of the higher levels that you should be aware of that are being discussed in COSA are, first of all, something called a duty of care provision. That just means that the platforms have to have some sort of demonstration that they are exercising reasonable care, that they are making sure they're putting safeguards in place to make sure that they are preventing and reporting any exploitation or abuse of children that is happening there. Before, it's been more like, well, we can't be held responsible for things that are user-generated. Before, it's really been like, well, we can't hold people accountable, companies accountable for things that are user generated. But now we just see the risk is really great. And we have got to have more conversations about how do we balance adult freedom and privacy with kid safety. The other thing that COSA would provide is tools for parents. It would require covered platforms to introduce tools for parents to have more control over their minors' accounts. Now, sometimes those don't even exist, but as parents, we need the right to control their privacy settings, to control their account settings, to restrict purchases. How many of you have had your kid get on an app? I may or may not have had to talk to my mother-in-law accidentally about a very expensive bill she got when my young child was playing a game on her phone she didn't realize could purchase things. But we want to be able to restrict purchases and to view metrics on how much they're using it, as well as make sure that both parents and minors have access to easy-to-use reporting mechanisms. So what we want is if we see harm occurring, if our kids see other kids being bullied, or they see someone expressing thoughts of self-harm or potential exploitation or abuse, we need a very easy to use reporting tool right there so that we can report it, and ways to encourage kids to do that so those things can be caught early before harm occurs. COSA also has a transparency requirement. So this is one of the more controversial elements, but it would require those covered platforms to undergo independent third party audits and to issue public transparency reports. This is one of the hard things because all of that data they have is proprietary. And so researchers don't have easy access to it. And there is a lack of transparency there. So the conversation is ongoing of how much do they owe the public to tell them we know what's going on. The last thing that COSA would do that's a major thing you should know about would be to establish the Kids Online Safety Council. Now, this is a research initiative that would look at trends, that would recommend prevention methods, and that would be driving some best practices. What are best practices for this? So that would be something that they would look at. There are some specific call outs for research on specific harms that are caused by social media. We know a little about this, but research honestly is just beginning. We're talking about things like mental health disorders, about substance use, child sexual exploitation, abuse. How do we make sure kids who are saying they're 13 are really 13? And what are best practices for market research on minors? Now, a lot of parents will ask, what age should my kid get social media? And that answer is actually really easy. It shouldn't even be a conversation until they're 13. And every kid is different. So parents, one of the best pieces of advice that I got from a parenting mentor that I have adopted and passed on is not to make privileges age-based. Like, you can date when you're 16. You can have social media when you're 14. They need to be character-based. They need to be responsibility-based. When you demonstrate these behaviors, when you exhibit these character traits, then we can have a conversation about the responsibility that comes along with the privilege that you want to have, and we can navigate that together. Because some kids are not equipped to date when they're 16. Some kids are, and some kids are in the same family, and that can be difficult. But setting that expectation early is really important. But the bottom line for me on social media is don't even have a conversation about it, not even possible till 13, and then wait as long as you possibly can. Go against the grain. Don't be afraid to be that parent that says no, while also realizing that our kids may make mistakes. And if you tell them they can't have social media, they very well may try to have a secret account. They may get on a friend's social media. They may experiment in some way. When their thumb moves faster than the prefrontal cortex in their brain, it is not always a failure of morals, a failure of values. Those don't develop until really late in the teen years and early into the young adult years, where those values are guiding decision making. Sometimes it's just an impulsivity. It's a failure of decision making. The other question I get very frequently is, how old should my child be when they get a phone? And again, the answer is the same. Wait as long as you possibly can. Again, there are different families that have different circumstances and different needs. I mean, there may be families whose kids are out working in a farm field and they need to have some sort of communication. Maybe a walkie-talkie wouldn't work. I'm just saying, there are all kinds of families and circumstances. But AT&T actually collaborated with the American Academy of Pediatrics to create a screen online that might help you to look to see if your child is developmentally ready. So you can look at that at screenready.att.com. And you can find that. And it's just a good starting place to have a conversation to know, are they ready? So some of the questions that are asked in that screen is, who is starting these conversations about getting a phone? Generally, if it is your child that's starting that, saying, I want a phone, I want a phone, I want a phone, I want a phone, that's going to be more concerning than as you as a parent saying, okay, let's talk about this. And really, it should be both of you looking at that. Another question is, how often do you feel they need a phone for their safety? So are they traveling on their own to school? Are they have after school activities? Are they visiting family and friends? Is there a situation where they're maybe going back and forth between parents' homes who have experienced divorce? That is something to look at and to see what really is their need versus our own convenience. Other question, how often would having that phone help them connect with family or friends they can't see in person? So maybe they have a sibling that's off at college. Maybe they have grandparents who live in another town. Do they need a phone or can they use yours? How often do they act responsibly? Are they going to be able to take care of this device? Do they follow rules in your house? So if you set rules, can you trust them to follow them? And are they going to break or leave this device? Can they take care of their homework and their backpack? How often do you trust their judgment to make decisions when you're not there? How do they handle impulses? How do they handle self-control in their behavior? Do they admit to you? Are they honest when they make a mistake? And are you ready to set up things like parental controls, creating a family media plan, and talking with them about their responsibility and obligation to act on things that they see and they do, they're doing online? So that may be something to look at and to help know when your child should have a phone. There are other tips for safety you can find that I posted online on my own social media, ironically, or in my book, Behind Closed Doors, a guide to help parents and teens navigate through life's toughest issues. You want to make sure those accounts are set to private and that their profile picture is a generic photo. We'll talk much more about safety. There's lots of other ways to keep your kids safe online, but it starts with us being careful. It starts with us being intentional, and we can do that for the good of our family and for our family health. Well, listen, may the Lord bless you and keep you and make his face shine upon you. May he be gracious to you and give you peace. And here's a good time to remind you that God says he gives wisdom freely and abundantly to all who ask, and we will keep asking him for wisdom. And I'll see you right here Monday again on the show. Have a great weekend.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.